This podcast contains mature themes and explicit language. Movie Lovers is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised.
Let's talk about...
Keep it going. Hello, Jacobson.
Hello, Jacobson. Are you the gatekeeper?
Are you the keymaster?
Yeah!
Oh, jeez.
I meant for that to be funnier. It just came out
kind of dumb. Maybe it'll be funny because it's not funny. You know what I mean? When something is so unfunny that it's actually funny. Like, it sort of, like, goes around the other side of the globe and that's a thing.
Yeah.
I try to do that sometimes. Say things that are so unfunny that they're funny.
You succeed.
Well, hey, everyone out there in movie land. Thanks for tuning into today's episode of Movie Lovers, which happens to be our 25th episode.
Happy 25th!
Dawn.
I like that. Hello, folks out in movie land.
Yeah, okay. I can incorporate that.
I like that. It feels very old school.
Right on.
So, this is Jonah. He's a musician. I'm Mally. I'm a multimedia designer, and together we are movie lovers.
That we are, because we love movies, and I know that I love you a whole lot.
I love you a whole shit ton.
All right, I accept these terms of engagement. Movie Lovers is a podcast where we take turns picking the movie each week, whether the other one wants to watch it or not, and we discuss our list of topics.
Doing this podcast every week gives us the opportunity to make the other one watch all of those movies we've been putting off since we met in 2015, which is surprisingly a lot of movies. This is a movie that you did not have to force me to watch, and I have already watched it with you, but... when we started talking about spooky movies, you were like, this.
Yeah, I mean, we have to do Ghostbusters.
Yeah, no conversation whatsoever. But before we get to that, what have we been watching lately?
Well, we just finished 6 Feet Under in its entirety, and yes. It is amazing. It's one of the best shows I've ever seen.
It makes me feel so old to say I watched it for the first time 20 years ago when it was fucking on.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, but that's a show that has stuck with me my whole life. If you have not watched it, it's a fucking experience.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 would recommend.
Yeah.
We just started watching the new season of The Voice because we're basic as they come, I guess, in that way. Ariana Grande, though, is one of the judges this year.
Yeah.
Not only is she so hot, wanted to touch the hiney, ahoo. But she is also insanely talented.
She's such a good singer. I'm really excited for them to get past the auditions to see how she works with people. Because she's one of those people that, like, I just love listening to her just, like, spit things out and, like, just sing off the cuff being cute and silly. Because she's just so good no matter what she does.
Plus, I would let her pee on me.
Right.
So we also watched Venom 2 in the theaters, and I was very... not super impressed by that.
I walked away feeling stupider.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb. And I realized one of the reasons why I didn't like it is because it was just so average. And I feel like the bar has been set so high for superhero movies now with, like, Avengers Endgame and Thor Ragnarok. And
yeah, we're so desensitized to the epicness.
Yeah.
This was just over the top and silly to me.
But it wasn't even, like... you know how there's those kind of, like, even the Marvel movies that just sort of are, like, filler, like, they're just there to, like, lead up to the next Avengers movie or whatever? This one just was not...
it, like, wasn't even up to par with
that. I have no reason to ever want to watch it again.
No.
Like, okay. I had a reason to watch it one time because I felt like I needed to see it.
Okay, all I can think the whole time that we're watching it, every time Venom is speaking, I was like, did they just decide they wanted to rip off the Bane voice? I mean...
well, I mean, it is Tom Hardy.
I mean, it is Tom Hardy, but, like, they could have made it a little bit different. It sounds exactly like Bane.
Yeah. Hom Tardy. I'm sorry. All right. And then, my most anticipated movie of the year we got to see, which is The Many Saints of Newark, which is The Sopranos prequel story. And I would have given it like a B. It was not what I hoped it would be. It wasn't terrible at all. The acting was great and stuff like that. I just like felt like they tried to do too much.
Yeah. When I even went into it knowing that like some people were already griping that it didn't quite set Tony up to be what he became. So I went into it knowing like, no, this is a story about Dickie Moltisanti. This is not a story about Tony Soprano per se, but it's still, I don't know. It just like couldn't make up its mind who it wanted to be about, I think.
Do you like my Dickie Moltisanti?
I do. Christopher.
Lols.
If you start calling your dick Dickie Moltisanti, I'm going to talk to you in a New Jersey accent. I know how much you hate that.
I hate that. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
So don't start with me.
And hey, Mallory guested on the I Love Old Movies podcast.
I did. It was so much fun. They did a whole episode on picking your Mount Rushmore of horror movie actors, and they talked to four different folks. A couple of us were podcasters. I think a couple weren't. This podcast is hosted by a father-daughter duo. He's like a film professor, and I think she's 16. It's a really cool, really cool podcast if you like old movies, and it was so much fun talking to them. You should definitely go listen to it. It was super fun, and everybody's answers are really cool.
So just to clarify for our listeners, when you say horror movies, do you mean like scary movies or movies about horrors, like, you know, prostitutes? I wish you all could see the look she's giving me right now.
Moving on. Let's talk about...
Keep it going. Well, it goes at the end, it resolves.
Are you going to fucking correct my pitch, you fucking
That's
bitch.
Not a pitch thing, that's note choice. Incorrect notes.
He does this. Okay. I can just, like, be in the car or walking around the house, and I'm, like, singing something. He's like, actually, it's dun-dun-dun, and he gets all technical, and he's using his hand to gesture, like, the note jump, and I'm like, fuck you. I'm singing Lady Gaga in the kitchen. I don't need you to correct my pitch, bitch.
Well... I picked this movie.
Yes.
Ghostbusters.
So glad you did.
It's just beyond classic. Everybody knows it. Everybody loves it. It was something as a kid that was rented and accompanied by a pizza that we would get because there was the pizza like takeout place right next to the video store.
Of course.
I mean, I wish in that moment that I had known how unique and special that whole experience was in the 80s to do that, because now I just look back on it, and as I'm sure many of our listeners do, with such fondness.
Yeah, I'll never forget VidCon in Onamia, our little video rental place.
It's not there anymore, is it?
No. I could show you where it was. I don't know if I think the building's still there. I don't know what's in there anymore. It's probably just like office space now, but...
I miss Capitol Video in Montpelier, Vermont, where I grew up.
I love how everything in Montpelier is Capitol something.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the Capitol, so.
Capitol Grounds, I think, is very clever. The coffee shop.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. I guess I never really thought about that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Well, hey, let's watch the trailer, my dear.
Ghosts.
Hello, Ghostbusters.
They're real.
You do? You have?
They're here.
We got one!
Ghostbusters.
Hey, anybody see a ghost?
They catch the ghost that won't stay dead.
Ghostbusters!
They're armed. They're dangerous.
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
All right, that's bad. Okay. All right, important safety tip. Thanks, Egon.
They're professionals.
Oh. I'm the chairman of the largest paranormal removal company in America.
You see it?
They're all that stand between you and the end of the world.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the sky.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Your girlfriend
lives in the corner penthouse of Spook Central.
You want this body?
Is this a trick question? Got your stick?
Hold!
Beat him up!
Smoke it!
Make him hard!
Ready!
Ghostbusters, starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, coming to save the world.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
We came, we saw, we kicked it.
Hey, Mallory.
Hey, Jonah.
What was your first memory watching this movie?
I don't actually know. But for sure, I watched it in its entirety with you about a year ago. But it's one of those movies that, like, I think was on randomly in my household. And all I remember is that it scared me. I never really was like, yeah, Ghostbusters. Like, no, it did. It fucking scared me. I think I was just, I was too young. And it's not as, like, feel good as something like E.T. is.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and I think all the comedy would have just gone over my head anyway. Like, I just.
Yeah. I mean, it still does.
So what was your first memory seeing this movie?
So like, I don't even know how old I was. I was obviously less than 10 years old when I saw this. I mean, probably between the ages of like 5 and 7, I'd wager. Watching this as a kid absolutely terrified me. I had nightmares from it. It's why I was afraid of the dark and other things too, which I will get to in my bullet points later. This movie made me afraid of a lot of things.
So was this like your E.T. basically? Like it scared you, but you still wanted to watch it over and over and over again?
Yeah. I was like super excited for Ghostbusters 2 when that came out also.
Oh.
Yeah. And I remember I did this thing. It was like, oh, like Ghostbusters 2 is coming out. And like, I remember the day that I was going to go see it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to like prep myself emotionally to be ready to be scared. So I had this like, it was this like foot pump that you use to blow up soccer balls or whatever. And I pretended like that was the, like their Ghostbuster gun and trap thing or whatever. And then I had a soccer ball that had a monster face on it. So I remember going out in the front yard of my house in Brookfield, Vermont. And like, I would like kick the ball so it would roll or whatever. And then I would chase after it with the, like
the hand pump.
Well, it was like a foot pump.
Oh, foot pump.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like, you know, when you push it, but it blows air out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. So it didn't work though. Cause Ghostbusters 2 like scared me even worse.
Oh,
fucking
shit.
The guy in the painting. He is Vigo.
Did we watch the second one together?
I don't think so, but now I want to.
Yeah. I don't know if I have. I mean, we don't have to do an episode on it, but it's spooky season, and you're not going to watch any other scary movies with me, so we might as well watch Ghostbusters, too.
True. I mean, I might. There's some, you know.
Yeah, I just got to find the sweet spot where it doesn't give you nightmares.
Yeah, because I'm a little baby. Oh my god, when Steve is on the podcast, we need to have him do his baby impersonation.
Jesus. That episode is going to be so full of so many things.
Oh, yeah.
Prepare yourselves,
yes.
Folks.
Oh, yeah. I guess we're officially announcing that we're finally going to have our first, like, on-podcast guest.
Mm-hmm.
Local professional stand-up comedian and fellow bartender, Stephen Smith, a.k.a. Steve Smith.
Smeven Stiff.
Smeven will be, and we're going to be doing Kingpin, which is the 90s Farrelly Brothers movie about bowling.
Bowling. Want to go bowling in your colon.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Mally explains movies.
I like to introduce this category.
Do it.
So this next category is called Mally Explains Movies in 30 seconds or less.
Must you?
Which is wishful thinking.
Yeah.
And go.
So Ghostbusters, as the title suggests, is about some fellas that bust ghosts.
I almost spit out my tea.
So there's a group of dudes, starts off as three dudes, becomes four along the way. The original three are college professors, and they study the paranormal, and they get kicked off of their campus because they don't want them there anymore. So they are like, well, shit, we got to actually make money if we're going to keep investigating this sort of stuff. So they move into an old fire department and turn it into their headquarters, and they become Ghostbusters. And then there's the character that Sigourney Weaver plays. Her name is Dana, and she is so hot and want to touch the hiney. And she gets a ghost in her apartment and eventually gets possessed. And she's got a hilarious neighbor, Rick Moranis.
Yep.
Jonah's going to have some things to say about his love for Mr. Moranis, I believe.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, Lewis Tully, let's...
And, yeah, so... they fucking fight a bunch of ghosts and shit, and then there's the Stay Puff Marshmallow Man.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Every time he locks himself in his own apartment, I just can't.
Okay, I think I literally wrote down, and you know, maybe it's just better to say this now than later, but every single time he came on screen, even if he wasn't doing anything, you started laughing your ass off.
Yeah. So... personal moment here, like for the listeners, I've been going through kind of a hard time lately dealing with some anxiety and depression and stuff like that. And I can't tell you how much joy Lewis Tully brought me last night, aka Rick Moranis, when we were watching it. Like, I needed that laughter and like the absurdity of his character so badly. Like, I've never, he was like my therapy cat or something. You know?
Your laughter was music to my ears. And now I know a great way to get you out of the dumps is to watch all of your favorite comedies.
Yeah, probs.
So.
Yeah.
Maybe we should watch something funny before bed. I know we're watching The Voice, but there's so many good old movies.
Tonight? I mean, yeah. I might even be down to watch Ghostbusters 2.
Snuggles?
Snuggles and Ghostbusters.
Snuggles and Ghostbusters and kitties.
And kitties, yeah.
Yes!
Forrest and Bruce will be delighted to join us.
Fuck yeah. All right, babe, let's talk about best actor. You go first.
Rick Moranis, because he was amazing as Lewis Tully. I didn't know who I was going to pick going into this, but it was just such like a visceral reaction that I had. Like, literally everything about... fucking Rick Moranis was so funny.
He's so hilarious. We really... okay, once we're done with spooky season, I might need to kick Parenthood up the list so that you can see him and Steve Martin, and it'll be like a fucking reunion of a bunch of your favorite actors. But he's such a chameleon. Like, his accent that he kind of does, like, just the persona that he puts on is totally different than any other character he plays in any other movie. He's so fucking wonderful.
I can't, like, I just think about him in Ghostbusters and, like, how he walks and, like, how he ran when he was running away from, like, the demon dog and everything like that. Like...
Yes.
Oh, Rick, if you're listening to this, please come out of retirement. The world needs you so bad.
Did you see that dumb commercial he did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not what I mean. No. I want him like, oh, God. I'm like, I have tears in my eyes right now. Just so good. All right. So, yeah, he's my best actor.
Okay. So when we went into the movie, I kind of had an idea of who I thought I was going to pick, but I let myself be open to just let whoever was going to speak to me, and... I stuck with my same pick, Sigourney Weaver. She is the mother of female sci-fi characters. She just is. And she's so fucking hot in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a point partway through the movie where I had to pull up IMDb and like do the math and figure out how old she was in this. She's like a year or two older than I am right now, and it made me feel so good that I'm in my, like, you know, early 30s, and Sigourney Weaver looked that hot in her, like, early to mid-30s. It gave me such a confidence boost to watch her and be like, oh my god, I'm in the same age range as her. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. You know, I always tell you this, that you get hotter and hotter as you get older, and I really mean it.
Well, thank you.
You do, so.
I would rather that than the opposite. I'm glad I didn't peak in high school.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, because all the, I guess this is the kind of thing I can get canceled for, or some shit, whatever. This is my hall pass moment that I was talking about. But, like, yeah, some of the girls that I went to high school with that were, like, super hot in high school have, like, you know, not.
You're not going to get canceled for that. As a girl who lived that experience and didn't suffer at the hands of popular girls, I was kind of the girl that was friends with everybody, so I wasn't, like, picked on. But, like, there were some fucking bitchy popular girls. And not all of them are really holding up that hotness all that great. Right. So fucking suck it.
Well, you know, you drink a lot of beer, crap out a couple kids.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, wow, we're really getting off on a tangent. Ooh,
let's talk about the O'Doyle, my dear.
Yeah. I bet you we have a different O'Doyle, because I think I would guess who yours was. He got a little bit more screen time than mine.
Yeah.
I have Dean Yeager, who was the college dean that, like, kicked them out of the university.
He's probably the better choice, because the EPA guy was the one that I said, because I was just like, I was totally having a brain fart of anybody else that was like a recurring dick, or like was only there to be a dick, but I had a feeling that the EPA guy was in it a little bit too much, but yes, you're
right. I mean, like, the EPA guy was really like a main villain character.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But Dean Yeager, I wrote down his name as soon as they said it. They're like, he walked in the room, they're like, Dean Yeager. And I was like, oh, this guy's a dick. He's about to kick them out of their college science lab.
What a dick.
Yeah.
All right. Character you most identify with.
So I have two. I find myself, like, trying to be a little bit more introspective in this instead of just going for the throwaway obvious thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like with Interview with a Vampire, I divulged into the duality of how I was a mixture of these personality traits from the one vampire and these from the other. Mm-hmm. In this case, I really identified with Ernie Hudson, who was just there for the paycheck, but found himself in those amazing situations. I've sometimes, you know, one of my jokes is like, I don't know, I just work here. I like to say that.
Yeah.
I feel that way a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like,
I can see some Ernie Hudson in you.
Yeah. And then Lewis Tully, because I'm a dork that nobody likes. So
shut up.
There's that. So I'm those two things. Or that's how I feel.
Hmm. I think you're more like Bill Murray.
Oh, no. Not really.
I mean, not in like his like like sick predatory way that he kind of was in this movie a bunch. But like how he's just like this goofy, funny guy, and I feel like he's the kind of character where, like, either his friends really like him or other people are like, you're fucking weird.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, my sense of humor is...
Yeah, and you're always, like, firing him off.
Right.
You never stop with being funny. He just kind of never shuts it off, either.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
How about you, Jacobson?
I said Egon.
Okay, yeah.
Just because I was really digging his, like, practical vibe. Like, he had his moments where he had, like, a line here or there that was funny. I mean, I feel like I'm funnier than him. I feel like I'm funnier.
Do you collect spores, molds, and fungus?
No, I don't. But I collect Funko Pops and E.T. stuff. And
you're maybe a more fun version of Egon.
Yeah, I just, his vibe, you know, like, I didn't feel like kind of the airhead that Dan Aykroyd was. I didn't feel like the funny, like, trying to nail somebody character like Bill Murray. I didn't feel like Ernie Hudson. Sigourney Weaver's cool, but she's just, like, way too classy of a broad for me. I'm not that classy.
That's for sure. I'm just kidding.
I'm just a different kind of chick. I'm not that chick.
Yeah.
So
you're a Jacobson.
Yeah.
And you're a Jean Jacobson.
I am.
So.
I am. Yeah. So I was just digging his practical vibe.
Yeah. Righteous. What did you have for the wee wee moment?
I had the montage of them, like, on the news and, like, being super busy and, like, getting all the ghosts and being all popular and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I just said anytime the theme song played. And actually, I realized that this movie is sort of like Mortal Kombat in that way, which is that it has a really strong, awesome theme song.
Mm-hmm.
And that song, like, comes back several times throughout the movie, just like in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like every the statement you song, you know, like Ghostbusters, Mortal Kombat. Oh shit, I just fucked it. I jacked your microphone, sorry.
Quit jacking my mic.
Yeah. But you get what I mean with that though?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So like, but yeah, it's sort of like a wee wee. It's like cue the wee wee music moment or whatever.
Yeah. I'm with you there.
Most iconic moment or favorite scene? Lewis Tully being chased by the demon dog. Or
which plays into my, you laughed every time Rick Moranis was on screen, even when he was doing nothing.
Just because, like, you just, like, look at his hair or his glasses, face. His face. His, like, he's like, I can't even say it. I don't know. He's like a mentally challenged, like, puppy or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like party that he had in his fucking apartment building.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh goodness. I'm so glad you like him so
much. Is there
much.
A best of Lewis Tully thing on
Montage,
YouTube?
Yeah. Probably.
I just gonna watch that anytime I'm feeling depressed.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. He makes me feel better about myself also. What about you? What did you have for your most iconic moment or favorite scene?
Well, for one of them, I'm going to say when they catch the green guy.
Slimer. Oh, Slimer. I didn't even finish what I was saying.
Oh, shit. You go.
Or Slimer in the motel, or the hotel, rather.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we both have that. I've got some YouTube comments on that one. But, like, you know, when I think of Ghostbusters, I actually think of that green dude before I even think of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man or anything. He's who pops into my head first. Oh, I'm getting a smooch.
I just love you.
Yeah?
I like listening to you talk.
It's a good thing we have a podcast together,
That's
then.
That's true. If I didn't like listening to you talk, this would be my personal hell.
Right. And if anybody's picking up on my nasally shit, I'm getting over a congestion of sorts. But I had a COVID test, and it's not COVID, so.
Woo!
Woo! It's just a shitty cold. Okay. So, yeah, the scene, the we came, we saw, we kicked its ass, that whole thing. A dude named Andrew Bjork 5 years ago on YouTube said, a lot of you probably already know this, but for those who don't know, the first few seconds of this clip were entirely improvised. Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and the crew were shooting when Murray said what it's heard in the scene. He actually did always want to do what he did, which was pull the tablecloth out. The crew decided to keep shooting, and the snippet eventually made it into the final cut.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. The flowers stayed up or whatever. And then I commented on the scene when they are haggling sort of with the guy at the hotel who was like, I don't want to pay that much money. And they're like, well, fine, we'll just let him go back in there. It just totally triggered my brain because I'm admittedly a TikTok addict, and they always have these videos where it's like, it costs that much because it takes me fucking hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Costs that much because I don't have superpowers. That's just what it made me think of when I rewatched that scene on YouTube. So my comment was at the end when he complains about the price, cue that down song from TikTok, and wrote down the lyrics.
Yeah.
So I win.
Yeah. And you look really hot in your little, like, what's that called? Your avatar photo?
Yeah, my little profile picture.
Yeah, I love that picture of you.
Yeah, thanks. I don't have those bangs anymore, but.
I'll give you some bangs. Come on.
Good job. That's your one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't wear my black glasses anymore. Do you miss my black glasses? I like my clear ones.
I know you're doing the, like, Britney Slays from Unleash the Archers look, which I like, but I also like the black glasses.
Yeah.
The blasses.
The problem is that these ones are, like, bigger than my other black ones, so when I put my other black ones on, they feel too small, so I need to get a pair that's, yeah, like, this size, but black.
Sometimes you look like Bubbles from the Trailer Park Boys in these ones.
Oh, don't say that. You remember that photo that your sister took of me?
Mm-hmm.
Jonah's sister took a photo of me in a thrift store where I put on a pair of these, like, old lady glasses from the 80s that, like, have, like, the funky, like, side angle thing, and they were, like, kind of purpley at the bottom, and they had the actual prescription in them, and she took a photo of me, and I just made, like, a duh face into the camera. I look like the guy from Trailer Park Boys. I look like Bubbles.
Yeah.
Because my eyes are just like, it's huge. It's a very unattractive photo, and no, I will not post it on Instagram. Don't ask.
Yeah, no, I don't want people thinking that that's what my girlfriend looks like.
I don't want people thinking that either. No.
Moving on.
Okay. My other iconic moment, favorite scene, and I also have YouTube comments for that, is when Sigourney Weaver and Bill Murray are in the bed together.
Oh, right.
Or whatever, and she's possessed and she's trying to seduce him or whatever.
Take me now, some creature.
We never talk anymore.
I'm making a rule. Never to get involved with possessed people.
Actually, it's more of a guideline than a rule. You know, I can...
I want you inside me.
Go ahead. No, I can't. Sounds like you got at least two people in there already. Might be a little crowded.
Hey, I would just like to say that her makeup is really sweet when she's possessed. She's got, like, all this, like, awesome, like, highlighter, like, on her cheekbones and whatever, mm-hmm. and her eyeshadow is fucking amazing. And they did some, like, crazy nose contouring, so it looked all, like, hollowed out in there, you know? It's really hot. So, the I want you inside me scene.
Which has one of my favorite Murray quotes in this movie.
Yeah, okay, I'm gonna talk about my thing with that, when we talk about quotes. So one comment, Eric Dizzy 2 years ago on YouTube said, I wonder what it would have been like if the Ghostbusters took on Reagan from The Exorcist. I've got The Exorcist on the brain a little bit because Linda Blair made it into my Mount Rushmore.
Well, yeah.
I Love Old Movies podcast, so it was like my two worlds colliding. And Cole Holtman, 10 months ago, said, if a two-timing player like Peter Venkman can see that someone can't consent if they're under the influence, be it alcohol or an extra-dimensional being, then you can too.
Thanks, Cole Holtman.
Which I also thought was kind of funny, just because he was, like, creepily coming on to Sigourney Weaver when he came to her apartment. Like,
yeah.
Like, that would not make its way into a movie today, because it would be... Ew, dude, you're being a creep.
You know that Cole Holtman has a brother?
Called Hole Coltman?
Yeah, Hole Coltman.
Yeah.
Or Holt Coleman. I'm stupid.
I'm so glad you interrupted me for that. Spike, 3 years ago, commented, still a better love story than Twilight. Couldn't agree more, sir. And, okay, yeah, this actually covers a point that I wanted to talk about in quotes, but we can talk about it now. Jack Rodak, the movie guy, 11 months ago, said, imagine showing this in a TV spot of the movie and then saying, rated PG. I also thought that was funny how, like, our rating system has gotten more strict over the years in a lot of senses. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie was rated PG, and they said, ass, bitch, her whole, like, I want you inside of me.
Do you want to be inside of me?
Yeah.
Is like, that a trick question?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it made me kind of double take. I had to, like, double check on IMDb. I was like, is this rated PG? Sure shit is. It'd totally be PG-13 today if that movie were released.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, and then the only other scene that I jotted down was, you know, when the ground splits open in front of the apartment building when the Ghostbusters are, like, making their way in there to do the final battle or whatever, the way that the street cracks and, like, you know, pieces of the street go down and the cop car crashes into it and the guys fall down in the crack, like, it just totally gave me Universal Studios vibes, like... That's the kind of effects you would see in a Universal Studios ride, which is why I fucking love theme parks, and especially Universal Studios, or, I mean, the Harry Potter world is at Universal Studios. It feels like being inside a movie.
Yeah.
So fucking sweet. Okay. Those are my scenes.
Perfect. It's so funny that you just said that scene where the ground cracks and they fall down into it. That was, like, I don't know. That I just thought that scene was really stupid and unnecessary, and I kind of, like, zone out. I don't care.
In the scheme of things, it was actually funny because, like, while I was having all those thoughts about it feeling like a theme park ride, I was like, do you know how many people it took to create that set and create those moving pieces to break apart and for the car to fall and all the smoke, and they had to fall in the hole just perfectly and all that shit, all for like 20 seconds of screen time.
Yeah.
Like, talk about putting all your heart and soul into your work and then having it last for 2 seconds.
Well, they should have saved their money because I didn't like that scene. So, on that note, what was your least favorite scene?
Oh, yeah. I just had a couple, two tiny little things, really. Otherwise, I didn't really have a whole lot that I didn't like. I thought it was really fucking stupid. And I know it's supposed to be funny, whatever. But, like, in the beginning when the librarian is, like, after she's seen the ghost and Bill Murray is, like, questioning her and he asked her if she's menstruating. And I was just like, okay, A, I understand you're trying to be funny, but not... It's not even funny. It's not like she was crying about it. It's like, are you on your period? Like, why would you even ask? And she's like 90. Of course she's not on her period, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, nothing comes out of there but dust these days.
Yeah, dust and cobwebs. Maybe a few bats. And then I didn't hate it, but it just, I found myself getting fucking pissed off when the guy comes to shut off the containment system.
Yeah.
I was like, I know this is a movie and a plot device, obviously, but, like, are you fucking dumb, cops? Why would you let them do that? Like, if fucking scientists are like, okay, maybe you don't like the way we're doing this, but if we shut this off, it's going to be a major problem. They're just like, okay, I guess you can do it. This was pissing me off.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Hey, Mallory.
Hey, Jonah.
What was the body count of this movie?
Zero? I don't think any person actually died.
No, I don't think that anyone did either. I just think that people were already dead.
Yeah, there were a lot of ghosts.
But, like, no one actually died in the movie.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Zero.
Zero. All right.
Moving on. Here we go. This is the Mally, they need to fuck category.
I'm ready.
Because every time we watch a movie, Mallory's like, oh, they need to fuck. Or they're gonna fuck.
Yeah.
One of the two. So. In this category, I give Mallory 5 options, and she has to choose one no matter what. I don't care.
Okay.
Here are your options. Here we go. Number 1, Janine and Egon.
Ooh, I have something fun about that.
2, Lewis Tully and Dana Barrett. We know that Lewis wanted to fuck her, but...
Yeah, I don't think I want to see that, though.
Ray and Slimer.
Okay.
Ray and the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Ooh.
It was the first thing he thought of, you know? So it was like, maybe he was attracted. Maybe he wanted to shove one of those marshmallow fingers up his bung hole.
I need teepee for my bung hole.
Or Dana and Venkman.
I'm going to say Janine and Egon.
Okay.
And I feel like I'm... This is just like an honest answer because I did read, and I actually don't think I included this in my movie magic, so I'm not like doubling down on something I'm going to talk about later, but the original script or the original movie, I think they actually shot stuff for it, but they ended up cutting it out. There was like an actual romance between those two characters originally, but it just was like too much going on.
I mean,
so they cut it out.
You could see that Janine was super interested in Egon and was always flirting with him.
Oh, yeah, for
she
sure.
She likes the nerdy guys.
But yeah, I like both of their nerdy vibes. I mean, it'd be some nerdy boning, probably just in Missionary, nothing exciting.
But, yeah.
You know, it'd be fun.
All right, so why don't we have you lead off with your favorite quotes?
All right. Can I start off with a Jonah quote?
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
When the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man was defeated and the big, like, huge load of his goop is plopped on the EPA man, you were like, I've had loads like that, and you know it.
I have.
I mean, I'm glad you haven't had any that big that would, like, engulf my entire body. Jesus.
Yeah, maybe I need more protein in my diet.
You do enjoy
it. I like
fine
it, I like it when I get it on your face, though. It's funny.
It's like
when
a challenge. Yeah. Like, get it on your face.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
We do.
This podcast is not for kids.
No, and you know what? We're going to share one more thing that's not for kids. You still have yet to make good on your goal of wanting to hit each character on my left sleeve in the face.
Yeah, Mallory has a superhero sleeve.
Superhero?
A Disney princess sleeve.
It's not a Disney princess sleeve. Everybody thinks that when they see it. It's like, there's two fucking Disney princesses on it. And then there's Harry Potter and Neverending Story and Labyrinth and Ferngully and Princess Peach. It's a fantasy fairy tale sleeve. Fine.
So there's a lot of faces on Mallory's fantasy fairy tale sleeve. And it is one of my goals that I always forget about when we're actually getting busy. But I want to bust a nut on every one of their faces. Especially Sleeping Beauty, because she's so hot.
Yeah. And she's sleeping. And you just want to like...
Yeah.
She's got the biggest face.
Yeah. And I could...
Well, except for Falcor's face.
Here, wait. Flip it around. I could nut on Ariel's... seashell titties.
Yeah.
Oh, and like, and then right, it looks like Princess Peach is holding out her hand like she just wants a load in it. Oh my god. Well, I'm sure we've lost some listeners now, and I'm
not sorry.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, so that was one quote, a Jonah quote. Another one that I wrote down was the don't cross the streams thing. I feel like that's pretty iconic. For the longest time, I actually, because like dudes joke about that. Like I've heard dudes joke about that and I'm like, I don't get it. Why can't you cross your pee streams? But it's a reference to Ghostbusters. So.
Right.
Right.
God, I just started thinking about that pumpkin ice cream in the fridge.
Ooh.
I might need to reward myself for my good dieting and gym time.
Yeah. Oh. This means you're happy when you want ice cream.
Yeah. I'm feeling happier.
Good.
Yeah. And it's not just because of Lewis Tully. It's because your love is just so nurturing to me. And you just melt my wall of ice that encapsulates my heart.
I love you so much. That's what I was put here on this planet to do.
Jacobson.
Oh, Jacobson. We're making people barf now. We went from talking about jizzing on my tattoo to being all sweet and mushy.
Do you have more favorite quotes?
I have a lot more, but I figured you had some too. So you want to go back and forth a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Aim for the flat top.
That was funny. She was hot also.
Really? I don't know.
See, I'm kind of into that androgynous thing. And yeah. That's not really your cup of tea.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Okay, so she's a dog. Delivered in Bill Murray's amazing sarcasm. Somebody blows their nose and you want to keep it? That was another Bill Murray line. Like, because they were super excited about the, like, goopy ghost residue.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's my Mally quote. I'm going to finish with my Mally quote.
Okay.
And then you can finish yours. But yeah, this is my favorite. You said, what if the hand that came up through the chair came up further back and went straight up her butt?
How unfortunate would that have been? So yeah, like when Sigourney Weaver's in her like chair and like three hands shoot out of the chair, and like that's when she gets possessed.
The monster hands.
Yeah, and the one monster hand shoots up right between her legs. Like it just could have been like 6 inches back and it would have just gone straight up her bung.
All right.
Okay, a couple more of mine. I fucking love Janine and her accent. I know that's the accent that you're not so fond of, but her like, Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Yeah.
I love it. I love it so much. Yes, it's true. This man has no dick. And I want you inside me. And then Bill Murray is like, I don't know. It seems like there's like two people in there already or whatever. And that's all I have.
All right, here we go. Into my absolute favorite category, the alternate porn title.
I can already see from your scribbling over there that you have a way more intense, maybe couple of options. Oh, God, saw a word. And
don't look at it. That's cheating.
So I kind of I went back and forth between two different ones. So I just put them down. And I was actually proud of myself that I fucking thought of these because usually I'm like, just brain fart when it comes up to...
Oh, my God. Will you say it already?
I'm going to fucking deck you, Jacobson.
Wow, so much buildup.
Nut Busters or Ghost Thrusters.
Ghost Thrusters is good.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that. All right.
It's because you suck.
Well, can you just have Ghost Thrusters? Because that's better than Nut Busters. Because I have Nut Busters, but I added more onto it.
Right. You always have, like, your epic secondary title.
All
right.
So I can't remember her name, but there was that one hot chick on Instagram who, highlighted the moment where I said my one alternate porn title. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh,
I think she's,
yeah,
like, an artist or something.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous gal. So this is dedicated to you, gorgeous gal, if you're listening to this. Nut Busters, but so I went above and beyond for her. Starring Dan Hemroyd, Bill Urethra, Harry Anus, and Ernie Butson.
Wow.
Yes. You're welcome.
Wow. Stage names and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you became a porn star tomorrow, which one of those names would you pick as your own?
Probably Bill Urethra.
But make it Billy.
You have to say it, though, like a certain way. Because, like, it's like Bill Murray, you know? Bill Urethra. I'm stupid. I don't know why you like me.
I like you so much.
Okay, we're going to make people literally barf. Can you edit out the smooch sounds?
Never.
What was your Diane moment, a.k.a. noticing things in the background?
All right, so when Bill Murray comes over to check out Sigourney Weaver's ghost problem, and he looks in her fridge, and he's like, oh my god. And he, like, pulls out a thing of, like, Oscar Mayer summer sausage. He's like, I can't believe you eat this stuff, or, you know, like, oh, junk food. Seeing that Oscar Mayer summer sausage just brought me back. Like, okay, so when I was a kid, you're going to think this is so gross. For the longest time, I would only eat white bread. I was not a wheat bread person. So I would have a sandwich with white bread, Miracle Whip instead of mayo, Oscar Mayer summer sausage, and dill pickle chips, like, in the sandwich.
Wow.
And,
like, they call that the white trash special.
Yeah, it was so fucking good. So
sick,
fucking good.
Jacobson.
Sometimes I would toast the bread. But then not do the
when
chips.
When you really
wanted
to be fancy, you toasted,
yeah,
the bread.
But when you toast the bread, you don't put the chips in it because it's, right, already crunchy. And then you actually mentioned the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
And then I jotted it down just because, I think our generation is always going to notice that in the background of movies.
Right. I just wrote down 80s food! Exclamation mark. Cheez-Its. Egon was eating Cheez-Its. I know they still have those, but...
But it was, like, old 80s branding.
Yeah.
I love that. Seeing, like, yeah, old bags of potato chips and shit.
Okay, so when Egon was eating that Twinkie, I was like, man, like, Harold Ramis actually ate that and pooped it out, and now he's dead. And it's like, that Twinkie was eaten by a person that was once alive, and I'm, like, seeing a Twinkie that has been through a digestive system and has been through the digestive system of a dead person. So yes, I do have problems. Okay, but anyway, moving on. Wishbone salad dressing in the fridge, but it said wishbone sour cream on it.
Oh.
It was like a sour cream salad dressing or something.
Weird.
And then Wise potato chips. Are those still around? I completely forgot about those until we watched that movie. And I'm like, I remember seeing those in the gas station.
Is that a East Coast thing? Because I've never heard of those.
It might have been.
Yeah. So, or a West Coast thing. You've lived on both coasts.
Yeah. West Coast. Okay. So, listeners, please comment and let us know if Wise potato chips are still a thing.
You know what? I'm going to post a photo of just a bag of Wise potato chips, and the caption is going to be, are these still a thing? And that's it. No hashtags, no nothing.
See if you can find a screenshot of that scene with the Wise potato chips. I think it's like the three of them or the four of them or whatever.
What are they doing?
They're like in their office or something.
Okay.
Okay. Music score and soundtrack. I have a lot to say about this.
Yeah. My notes are Rototoms.
Right? There were some Rototoms.
And,
Oh, can I do... For those listeners who don't know what Rototoms are, it's those drums you hear in 80s music specifically, and they're like... broom, broom. Those ones, you know what I mean? They're like very synthy tom sounds on the, like, okay.
You're such a roto tom.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're my favorite roto tom.
I appreciate that. What a kind Jacobson you are. Yeah.
The only other note that I have is the music when the ghosts get let out is really cool in a very different vibe than, like, the rest of the music and the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. And I just was like, oh, this is fucking sweet. And I wrote that down. Those are the only notes I wrote down because I know you have a lot of things to say.
Okay. Let us first talk about the main theme song.
Yes.
We all know it. So this song was, quote-unquote, written by Ray Parker Jr. However, he got sued by Huey Lewis and the News, or Huey Lewis, I guess, because it was such a direct ripoff of that, I need a new drug, one the womb spill. It's got the same, like, bass line thing in it, and the same drum beat and everything. And yeah, and Huey Lewis won the lawsuit. Or, like, he got, like, a percentage of the sales or whatever. I have so many fond memories of being at the roller skating rink in the 80s, because my daycare center, we would go to the roller skating rink. We'd have field trips there. And I couldn't roller skate for shit, and I still can't. But anytime the Ghostbusters theme song came on at the roller rink in the 80s, I gave zero fucks about how shitty of a skater I was. I would get out there and do my damn best, and I would skate as hard and fast as I could because I was so pumped up because it's so sweet. And then I had the cassette tape, of course, of the soundtrack, and I only ever listened to the one song.
Really?
Yeah, so I probably wore it out.
rewinding.
And then there was also, like, the Saving the Day. There was a lot of, like, on-the-nose songs with the lyrics in them that were, like, directly correlating to whatever was going on.
There was a whole nother song that mentioned Ghostbusters in there that wasn't the main theme also.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. I was like, why does nobody ever sing this song?
So I had this epiphany, like, and now I'm going to just speak to the general score of the film. It has a New York kind of sound. It's like an association thing for me. It's kind of like the music in that Law & Order TV show.
Mm.
It's like, it's kind of, like, I don't know how to describe it. There's oboes in it and piano, and it's like, it just sounds like New York to me. I cannot put my finger on it and isolate specifically, what it is that sounds like that to me. But the sound is always, it's always evoking that imagery in my head if I heard it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like it.
That is as profound as I ever get. Moving on. Movie magic behind the scenes. I'm going to get up and stretch my legs.
All right. And come back.
And come back. Yeah.
I will have stuff that you'll probably think is cool.
I knew that you would have so much stuff, and that's why I wrote nothing down. I'm going to let you really take this section.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit. I grabbed a bunch of stuff from IMDb, and then I grabbed some other stuff from a Den of Geek article. All sorts of good stuff. So, this movie has a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. That is fucking amazing. Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 stars out of 4, which is pretty fucking good for him. I pulled a quote from sort of like the middle of his review just because I thought it was pretty poignant. He says, "The movie stars Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Harold Ramis, three graduates of the Second City National Lampoon Saturday Night Live tradition. They're funny, but they're not afraid to reveal that they're also quick-witted and intelligent. Their dialogue puts nice little spins on American cliches, and it uses understatement, irony, in-jokes, vast cynicism, and cheerful goofiness. Rarely has a movie this expensive provided so many quotable lines." That just hits the nail on the head, and it's not a surprise to me that this is one of Jonah's favorite movies, because it's got so many different kinds of comedy in it, and all the kinds that totally tickle his funny bone. So, fucking awesome. Almost none of the scenes were filmed as scripted. Most had at least one ad-lib, and most of Bill Murray's lines are ad-libs, which shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. In the middle of the film's initial release, to keep interest going, Ivan Reitman ran a trailer that was basically the commercial the Ghostbusters used in the movie, but the 555 number was replaced with a 1-800 number. And it allowed people to actually call in. And callers got a recorded message of Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd saying something to the effect of, hi, we're out catching ghosts right now. And they got thousands of calls per hour, 24 hours a day for almost 6 weeks. That is insane. That just is really cool and speaks to the times. I don't think something like that would really have that effect today, but back in the 80s, hell yeah. And that's just, I fucking love that fact. I think that's really cool. Harold Ramis only intended to write the film, to co-write the film, but he decided to play Dr. Egon Spengler after he felt he was the best person suited for the role, and I could not agree more. On the set, Dan Aykroyd refers to the Slimer ghost, the green guy, as the ghost of John Belushi. Slimer's gluttonous eating was based on Belushi's cafeteria scene in National Lampoon's Animal House from 1978.
That's really cool.
Fun fact.
I did not know that.
The schedule for getting the movie into theaters for its release date in the summer of 1984 was so tight that the director, Ivan Reitman, said that the final print included incomplete special effects shots and errors like visible wires, but remarkably, people did not care. I think that's really funny.
Yeah, I never noticed that.
They're probably removed now.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, just rushing to get it out so quickly. But for then, it must have been fucking insanely awesome. So this movie was the highest grossing comedy of all time until Home Alone came around in 1990.
Which I can't wait to do for our holiday run of movies.
Christmas movies!
Yeah.
Oh, I got really Cartman there.
Mm-hmm.
That was weird. The firehouse from the movie is actually two different firehouses in two different cities. The exterior is in New York City, and the interior is in downtown Los Angeles. The Los Angeles firehouse has been used in many, many movies. The film, I loved this. And once I read this, I was like, oh God, yeah, this makes so much sense now. So the film was originally intended for an adult audience. The cast and crew were surprised to find that children loved the film as a fun fantasy adventure of scientists battling supernatural threats with cool backpack weapons. It led to a cartoon spinoff, The Real Ghostbusters in 86, and the sequel in 89. And the sequel played down the original film's adult elements like smoking, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't really have reference for that, but knowing that it was intended for an adult audience, I was like, okay, this makes more sense to me now.
Right. Well, there was a lot of smoking in it. I noticed that.
Yeah. You know? I mean, like, yeah, that's just movies.
There's like that famous scene of Ray, you know, and he's got like the cigarette, like,
yeah,
strangely hanging from his lip.
That happens. That happens. I used to be a smoker when I was in high school, and it's always a bitch when it, like, it's like when your lips are dry on the outside, but then they're like moist right on in here, and mm-hmm. like the filter will stick to your inside of your lip. Michael Keaton turned down the role, or turned down both the roles of Dr. Peter Venkman and Dr. Egon.
Interesting.
I think he could have been funny in this, but I don't know that he would have had the same chemistry. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man suit cost approximately $20,000 each. There were three of them made, and they were all destroyed during filming. So $60,000 on the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man suit, and it's not even still around to, like, be in a fucking museum or something. That's insane.
Crazy.
The budget for this movie is just fucking insane. I feel like I have a note on it somewhere, but the rooftop set for the final confrontation between Gozer and the Ghostbusters occupied an entire soundstage and required 50,000 amps of electricity to be properly lit. Columbia Pictures had to shut down other stages while this scene was being filmed. The special effect for an early part in the movie where the catalog drawers were open and the cards were flying out. Okay, yeah, this was one of the things that I really wanted to look up, was like, how did they do all the effects? It's like in the 80s, and they're obviously, like, really old school, and some of the effects are really janky. I just, like, wanted to learn how they did everything. So, with the cards flying out, I can see you smiling out of the corner of my eye. When the cards were flying out of the catalog drawers, this was created by prop workers hidden behind a stage setting made to look like part of the library. The drawers were pushed open from the back, and the cards were blown out with copper piping, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Brucey has decided to join us.
Hello, Bruce. Welcome to our podcast today.
Hey, Bruce.
Oh,
what a boy.
What a lover.
So before this film, Sigourney Weaver was known for more serious movies. She had done a lot of comedy at Yale Drama School, and she wanted to show that side of herself more. So this was a perfect opportunity. Sigourney Weaver said that kids would come up and ask her if she really turned into a dog. It's adorable.
Okay, so she's a dog.
When Alice the librarian is asked whether anyone in her family had ever had any history of mental illness, she said that she had an uncle who thought he was Saint Jerome. Saint Jerome is the patron saint of libraries.
Librarians.
Oh, librarians.
Yeah.
So that's just a cute little fun fact. Little fun fact.
I love fun facts. They're fun.
They are so
factual.
According to Harold Ramis, the name Egon Spengler, which I actually was really glad I came across this, because, like, what kind of fucking name is Egon? I love it, but it's so weird. So it was inspired by Egon Donsbach, a foreign exchange student at his high school, and a historian named Oswald Spengler.
Okay, if we ever got another cat, I would be totally okay with naming it Egon.
Oh my god, that would be such a wonderful cat name.
Egon Spengler Jean Jacobson. Yeah.
It would be like naming a kitty after Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Egon Spengler, Harold Ramis, Jean Jacobson.
Oh, Jesus. Each subsequent cat that we get is going to have a longer and longer name. Dan Aykroyd described the Mr. Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man as a cross between the Michelin Man and the Pillsbury Doughboy, which, fuck yeah. He wanted to create a fictional brand mascot that everyone would have grown up with. Mission accomplished. In a 2016 interview, Paul Feig said that, according to Dan Aykroyd and Ivan Reitman, the white ghost in the iconic Ghostbusters logo is called Moogly.
Huh.
Which just reminds me of Mowgli.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. Moogly. That's a weird name.
And 37 of 39 found that interesting.
Yes.
It says on the article.
And this movie was released the same day as Gremlins in 1984. Really fucking good movies.
Yeah. God, Gremlins is another one.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, that would have to be a Mally pick because I don't have that much. I think I've only seen it twice.
I mean, I've really only seen it a handful of times. I love Gizmo. My dad had a fucking Yorkie named Gizmo.
Yeah.
And I was really into Gizmo as a character. I had a t-shirt that with Gizmo on it in high school. But I don't know. I didn't nerd out over it like I did a lot of my other puppet movies. But I would gladly watch it. This article from denofgeek.com, which is called Ghostbusters Saluting the Effects of the Original Movie, written by Craig Thomas, and this is from back in 2016. I will share this link on our social media. I'm going to scroll through some of these things that I screenshotted. Just, again, me wanting to dive into all the special effects. Some of this I'm just going to read verbatim from the article. So deal with it. Headed by Richard Edlund, after being contacted by the director, the effects were undertaken by Boss Films, which put together a great team, including those who had worked on Poltergeist and Return of the Jedi. Reitman himself also brought some specialist knowledge to the table, having produced and directed a Broadway show called, fittingly enough, Murder on Broadway. He was familiar with a lot of visual tricks that Ghostbusters would lean on. Among these were the 360-degree turn, which was utilized in the iconic scene where Dana Barrett, played by Sigourney Weaver, is possessed by Zool and floats and revolves several feet in the air. Remarkably, this was all done live with no optical effects. It required Weaver to wear a full body cast to take her weight as she starts to rise. And then to get her to turn, it was attached to a steel arm that pivots around, which was hidden in the drapery. That just reminds me of, like, magician, like a magic show effects. I fucking love it. The slime was made out of methyl silos, which is otherwise known as Chinese food starch. And the melted marshmallow at the end of the film was not marshmallow. It was actually barrels and barrels of shaving cream.
Mm.
Or maybe it was Jonah's jizz.
Could have been.
I love this. Practical effects, people. I will sing praises of practical effects all day long. So one of the scariest scenes in the movie is when Dana gets pinned to the chair and the legs of the dogs, you know, fucking go through their chair and whatever. So the light behind the door creating a sense of impending doom, which I guess was ripped off from Close Encounters of the Third Kind, just having light behind the doorway. Bleh. The distorting effect on the door, which bends as if some creature is trying to pass through from another realm, was just using like a rubber thing, yeah. Obviously, which you can totally see that. And then the arms and legs that burst through the sofa and pin her down, this was done by stage grips hiding in a trapdoor underneath the chair. And that was it. We were talking about this last night after we watched it. There's something just to be said for practical effects because it's actually happening right then and there. And even when some of them are a little bit chintzy, you know, it still gives it so much atmosphere. Like, movies are never going to feel like that ever again.
Yeah. Can I also say that you're the most attractive to me when you're super excited about nerdy movie stuff? I just love the look on your face and the excitement and enthusiasm that you have.
I love you so much.
Thanks for being the nerd of this podcast.
Yeah, thanks for being the hot, funny man of this podcast.
You're welcome.
Bruce is so snuggled in my lap and he's licking my arm.
What a sweet boy.
Okay.
Hey, Jacobson.
Hey, Jacobson.
Who would you bone?
I don't think it's a secret. I would bone Sigourney Weaver. That hair. That fluffy hair. That 80s curly fluffy hair.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Her mouth is really hot. Like, her mouth and her teeth.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah.
And her bone structure. Like, just like her cheekbones and her jaw and her nose. She's just so beautiful. And like, when she is like up on like the ledge of the building. Ow, Bruce, you're biting me. Ow.
I'd put my bone in her structure.
Ow, he's biting me so hard. Look at those teeth marks.
Oh my God. And it's too bad too that my awesome, hilarious joke about boning her structure got...
Sorry, he fucking decided to eat my goddamn arm. But when she is like perched on the ledge of the, you know, rooftop in that orange dress and like the slit just opens up and it like, mm-hmm. you see her whole thigh like up to her butt cheek.
Yeah.
Got hot under the collar. And also the other note I wrote is that it makes me proud to be in my 30s. Looking at how fucking hot she is in that movie, I'm like, yes, this is my body and I love it.
I love it too.
I love your body. Who would you bone, baby love?
Sigourney Weaver, duh. But especially when she is Zool the Gatekeeper, or when she's, what's it called?
Possessed?
Possessed. I couldn't remember that word for some reason. When she's possessed by Zool. She's like extra hot.
Yeah.
Actually, an honorary mention to Janine, who is really cute in a nerdy way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's more cute. She's not hot, but she's yeah. cute.
I like cute nerdy girls.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Lols.
Lols.
All right. So you all just listen to Mallory talk a lot.
Yeah.
So, story of my life. Controversial take. Murray's character would not fly today in any movie. He's way too aggressive with women, and it was pretty much a sex offender.
Yeah, it's pretty cringy.
It's bad.
Pretty cringy.
What is your controversial take?
My controversial take is that our cat is possessed and just decided to claw the wall where there is nothing. I actually like the Lady Ghostbusters movie remake. Everybody didn't like it, but I actually liked it. Controversial take.
It was good, not great.
Yeah. And like, so I didn't grow up with this version. I actually would really like to rewatch it now after freshly having watched this version just to like have more context.
Yeah.
But I think it offended a certain type of male moviegoer that grew up in the 80s. Not your type, but another type.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't the best thing in the world, but I still really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. I just think it was like an example of Hollywood trying too hard.
A little.
To get like a pat on the back.
Yeah.
You know, and that's stupid.
Yeah.
And Chris Hemsworth was really funny as, like, the male version of Janine, basically.
Right. You know, and honestly, if it hadn't been done in this time of, you know, making sure that we're, you know, giving women more opportunities and people of color more opportunities, like, if it hadn't been done in this time, you could have looked at that remake as just, like, a gender swap. Like, how the way, you know, like in theater, like the play Glengarry Glen Ross by David Mamet. It's really fucking cool when they in theater will just gender swap, and instead of having it be all dudes, it's all chicks. Like, it's really cool when plays or movies do that. If we maybe weren't in this like super PC Me Too movement time, maybe it wouldn't have gotten as much flack.
Yeah.
It could have just been like, we're literally gender swapping the Ghostbusters, the receptionist, everybody. So that's my controversial take.
Okay.
What is your emotional take? I feel like you have a lot of emotions around this.
I do. First, I want to talk about the nostalgia. The cartoon, I watched that. It was called The Real Ghostbusters. You mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
There were Ghostbusters fruit snacks, and like the coolest kids at the lunch table had Ghostbusters fruit snacks. That was a big deal.
That's rad.
And then there was like Ecto Cooler drinks that were like Slimer themed or whatever.
Cool.
I had a Ghostbusters lunchbox and I had Ghostbusters toys. So just the whole thing was just so ingrained in my childhood.
Did you have any Ghostbusters like shirts or clothes?
I can't remember. I might have had some Ghostbusters Velcro sneakers. It's possible.
I feel like I can picture little Jonah having, like, little boy tidy whiteys that had Ghostbusters on them.
Man, why are you picturing that? It's such a perv.
Because I'm perverted.
Yeah. So I had this in my bullet points, but it makes way more sense to move it to my emotional take. And I just want to take a moment to talk about Harold Ramis. And I'm going to try not to get too choked up here because...
But it's okay if
you do. Rest in peace. But... Harold Ramis was so funny and talented of a human being, and everybody knows that. And he was such a brilliant visionary and writer. I mean, being behind also movies like Groundhog Day and Multiplicity, which are two of my other favorite comedies of all time. But there was a warmth to Harold Ramis. And I feel like it doesn't get talked about. I don't know. Maybe it's just something that I see or I witness. It's like the tonality of his voice. And I feel like he has a really small role in the movie As Good As It Gets, where he plays the doctor that's helping Helen Hunt's kid.
Yeah.
And if you all that are listening would just take the time to watch that movie, or at least watch the scene or the scenes with him in it, from that movie, then I feel like you would get a grasp on what I'm talking about. His heart and who he was and his vision, and just that he was just this awesome, like, warm person who was passionate about being funny and about making comedy that will last forever, shows through. And it's like, it transcends his acting, because he's in these movies and he's acting, but you can still just like see what's inside of Harold Ramis. And it is his warmth and his kindness and who he was as a person is projected through the characters that he, you know, portrays in these movies. And I love him. He's one of my, you know, heroes, and I just have such admiration for him. And they say that you live as long as the last person that remembers you. And so Harold Ramis will live at least as long as I do.
Aww.
That's my eulogy.
That's very sweet. And I also like watching you when you get passionate and talk about movie things that you love. It's very sweet. You touch my heart. You touch my emotions with your take.
Well, thanks.
Yes. My emotional take... is just that this movie really brings you back to another era. Everything about it, the group of actors that this movie stars, you know, this is like one of those flagship movies of that group of comedic actors. Like when you look at the 90s and then flagship movies like Tommy Boy or Happy Gilmore, like flagship movies of those 90s actors, you know, Ghostbusters is one of those 80s movies. But on top of it being part of that era due to the actors, it's part of that era due to the filmmaking style, the music, the special effects, just the whole package evokes nothing but pure nostalgia in such a fun way. And so really, it just is, it takes you back. You're just transported, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it this way, Ghostbusters and the whole, like, the whole pop culture surrounding it was such a big part of the 80s. And the 80s was also, as many would agree with me, the greatest decade of movies and pop culture and music that existed in human history. So, therefore, by default, Ghostbusters being such a big part of that is just one of the greatest things in human history. It's like,
it's a tent pole.
It's art. It's just like timeless comedy and filmmaking and writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you picked it, 'cause this is just one of those greatest movies of all time. Yeah. Basically.
I mean, absolutely one of the greatest comedies, and then just one of the greatest movies also.
Yeah, it's like one of the greatest comedies, also one of the greatest, like, paranormal movies, you know, just so many fucking things. So many things. All right, let's stop gushing. It's very beloved.
Yeah, all right, we're gushing.
Baby.
Yes.
Who does your Oscar go to?
Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis for the writing of this, and then also just the movie itself for being one of the best.
Yeah, which we've already
talked
to death.
Yes, we have.
My Oscar goes to the effects. Even though they're chintzy in some spots, I love them. From the weird dog puppet things, superimposed, whatever. I did read a cool thing about, like, the ghost in the library in the beginning, like, that was super technical for its time, and it would take like 3 weeks to render like 1 second of it or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that ghost is so cool and so multidimensional. And then, you know, the rays that come from their guns, the Slimer guy, just, and all the ghosts, explosions, all the stuff. It's just, the effects are sweet.
Yeah. Hollywood, take note and never forget.
Yeah.
This is what people want.
Yes.
For fucking quit it with the CGI all the time.
For fucking quit it.
For fucking quit it.
What would you rate this movie?
Fucking 10.
I'm actually increasing my score.
You gave it a 9.
I'm giving it a 9. I had 8.5, but now that we've been talking about it, I'm like really jazzed about it.
So I wrote a 10 with 3 exclamation points after it.
Yes.
Impact and influence of this movie on the industry. It obviously really helped launch Bill Murray as a big star, and it's influenced hundreds upon thousands of comedies that have come after it, you know, with these ensemble casts and, you know, but incorporating comedy, but then, like, you know, any kind of sci-fi element or something like that.
Yeah.
There's a movie called Evolution. I don't know if you've seen it.
I think I've seen bits and pieces, but I know exactly what movie you're talking about.
So it's basically, it's like Ghostbusters, but with aliens instead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got, you know, an Ivan Reitman movie.
Mm-hmm.
So he was behind this too. But it had David Duchovny in it. And
did it have Jamie Kennedy in it? Or am I making that up?
No, he wasn't in it. Orlando Jones. Do you remember him? He was the black guy that was in, like, the 7-Up commercials or whatever, and, you know what I mean?
I think I know what you're talking about, actually.
Yeah, and he's got a really small role in Office Space, but he was so funny in that movie. I want to put it on the list. I'm worried that, like, it won't get as much clicks, you know, that people won't listen to that episode a lot, because it kind of, like, flew under the radar, and I don't know how many people remember it, but it was just such a good movie.
I feel like it lives in a very niche zone, so the people that like it probably really love it.
Yeah. So. Well, maybe there's not a lot of other podcasts out there that talk about that particular movie, so maybe, you know, I don't know.
So I have 2 points in my impact and influence, one that I wrote down and one that I did not. Obviously, I'm going to say it had, like, a huge influence on the sci-fi genre, like breaking out into that, like, you know, funnier sci-fi like we were talking about. But speaking of sci-fi, like, it was a good stepping stone in Sigourney Weaver's career. You know, she had done the first Alien movie in 79 before this, and then after this movie, you know, all the subsequent Alien movies, Galaxy Quest, Avatar, blah 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 blah. Like, she's the mother of sci-fi, you know, female characters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And someone that I more recently love a lot, the actress and writer and director Britt Marling, who starred in The OA, starred in and wrote, and she probably directed some of it, and then also the movie Another Earth. Like, if you listen to any interviews with her, she just sings Sigourney Weaver's praises and how, like, when she was a little kid, it was like, oh my God, women can be in sci-fi movies. It, like, that was just like, yeah, her hero. So huge impact and influence there. But obviously it has a big enough impact and influence that it's still getting remakes like the Lady Ghostbusters. And more importantly, the new one that's coming out really soon.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yep, yep.
And this is based on, this is like Egon's family, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. So that's going to be fun. I'm really excited to see that.
Totally. Is that coming out this year or is that next year?
Yeah, it's this year. Oh, yeah, sweet. Like this month still, I think.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I can't remember if it's October or if it's November. Let's look really fast.
Okay.
Ghostbusters Afterlife, November 19th.
Hell yeah. So, something else to look forward to in November.
When we come back from Florida.
Cool. All right. Is it time for Jonah's bullet points?
Can I make one point really quick? I had some notes in the bullet points space on our notes, but okay. It was meant to go on my movie magic. Reggie Bell Johnson popped up for about 2 seconds in this movie. It's when the guys get thrown into jail and he's like the black cop that pops up. And I was like, Jesus Christ, how many times does he play a cop? And he looks exactly the same in every movie in that same like stereotypical cop uniform. So I had to look it up. He has played a police officer 8 times in his career, and that might not seem like a lot, but like it's so many like characters that you just know him for. So he was Carl Winslow in Family Matters, Al Powell, Sergeant Al Powell in Die Hard, the unnamed guard in this movie, and then more importantly, from my fucking heart, he played David Sutton in Turner and Hooch.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny because he's just like a carbon copy of the same thing. It's like, dude, quit typecasting him as the black cop, man. But he does it really well. So this
can
is
we,
what I know
I just
from.
Thought of my alternate porn title for Turner and Hooch. So if you want to do that one for the podcast, that'd be really sweet.
I love that movie with a fucking passion. So
yeah,
why don't
I'd be
we?
So happy.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Jonah's bullet points. You have so many.
Yeah. Jonah's bullet points, aka things I want to say but I don't really want to talk about, or that I already have talked about. Bill Murray really was a creep in this movie. Basically a sex offender. The soundtrack blows, besides the main theme song, which we find is ripped off from a Huey Lewis song. Anyway, Dan Aykroyd getting blown by a ghost was so random.
Oh my God, I can't believe we didn't talk about that. Fuck!
Yeah, well, we just did. No way would Dana Barrett date Bill Murray under any circumstances. No. Bill Murray, like, will you be honest? Is Bill Murray attractive at all,
no.
ever? Not even when he was younger? He's just kind of not. And, like, so aside from the fact that he wasn't physically attractive at all, he also was a fucking creep and, like, obviously a terrible person who used any position of power that he was in to manipulate and try to bang chicks. Okay, moving on. Sigourney Weaver had really pointy teeth, but I would still let her bite me.
Oh.
Everything about Louis Tully is the funniest thing in this movie. I'm gonna go further with that. Everything about Louis Tully is the funniest thing ever, ever. I love you. Sigourney Weaver makes me feel funny, kind of like when I used to climb the rope in gym class. That was a really bad Garth.
You've done better.
Yeah. The sound of the Ghostbusters siren puts a huge smile on my face to this day. It's so distinctive.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can hear it in my head. Camp Wakanda. There was some reference to Camp Wakanda.
Oh my God, yeah, I remember that.
And I'm like, and I was thinking, like, is that where the Black Panther country or whatever, or the city, got its name? I guess it was a country.
Yeah, yeah.
Was Who like was a, it that was camp, like, worked at Camp Wakanda or something?
I
or?
Don't know, but I remember it too. I just didn't write it down.
Yeah. Bill Murray plays the same character in this movie as he does in Groundhog Day, except he's a little less rapey.
Less rapey.
Real talk.
Nice.
I mean, I guess that's just the, like, Bill Murray's character that he probably played a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to finish with things that this movie made me afraid of when I was a child.
Ooh, yay.
Opening the fridge.
Oh, no.
I was afraid there were monsters in the fridge. Being alone in the library. I never wanted to be in a library and be alone, like walking through the aisles. Statues. Because fucking statues. And then my own bed. I was afraid of, like, getting in bed. Once I was in bed, I would just pull the covers over my head because I was so afraid of ghosts, you know? But, yeah. Like, the process of, like, going in my room when it was dark and, like, getting in my bed or getting up to pee or anything.
Yeah.
This movie kind of ruined me.
I was so scared of the dark, too, so I feel you. But, oh, my God. Such, like, small child anxiety, baby. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And now it's adult anxiety that I have.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I was so happy that I just had, like, my bed was just on the floor for the longest time until I, like, moved out of my little kid bed and into my big girl bed, and then I got, like, an actual bed frame, and I wasn't so scared of the dark anymore. I mean, I still am afraid of the dark as an adult, but just less. But Poltergeist, that fucking, like, clown thing that's under the bed that, like, grabs the little boy. Ugh, fucking. See, I'm not afraid of clowns like some people are. My sister.
All right. Well, are you glad that I made you watch this movie?
Yes.
Who's picking next week?
Well, I mean, we're not going to probably air Kingpin until after spooky movie season.
Right. So probably like November or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I'm still set on watching The Craft.
Okay.
Because I was like, we need to watch a witch movie. And there's so many witch movies to choose from. I mean, I already watched Practical Magic with you a while back. And then there's Hocus Pocus. There's this. We already watched Witches of Eastwick not that long ago. And while that would prompt a lot of fun poly conversation, I don't know. Just, you haven't seen The Craft.
No, and I've also had enough poly conversation, so
yeah,
I'm good there.
And we have just, like, done processing feelings for a little while.
Yeah.
There's so much of that. Like,
tapping out.
Yeah, being poly is wonderful, but you talk about your feelings a lot.
Yeah, I just want to have fun.
Yeah. Girls just want to have fun.
And so do Jonas.
So do Jonas. Okay.
Well, hey, thanks for being the Dana Barrett to my Peter Dinklage, or wait, Peter Spangler.
Venkman?
Peter Venkman. Damn it.
So many different things.
Yeah.
Thank you for being the keymaster to my gatekeeper. Yeah, I'm the gatekeeper.
Right.
And I'm the key. You're the key.
Right.
Insertion.
Yes.
Sex. Yeah.
I would totally have you over to my apartment party that Lewis Tully had. All right. Well, hey, everyone out there. Please go out and support your local movie theaters. They need it now more than ever. Things are getting back in the swing of things. There's so many good movies coming out.
Yes.
So get out there.
Get that popcorn.
Speaking of popcorn, I think that we should go watch something, and I want to have popcorn because I haven't had popcorn in a really long time. I really
want popcorn or do you want pumpkin ice cream?
Fucking both things.
Fucking yes.
So, like, I want to start with popcorn, and then, like, we'll probably pause whatever we're watching, because then I'm going to want ice cream.
Sweet.
All right.
I love you. You're my best friend.
You're my best friend.
All right.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this episode of Movie Lovers, and we'll see you next time.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Thanks for listening to Movie Lovers. If you like what you heard today, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Your feedback goes a really long way to helping our little podcast that could be seen by the world. Also, don't forget to give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram, too. You can find us by searching the handle Movie Lovers Pod on either platform. This is the part of the podcast where Jonah and I shamelessly promote our respective services that we provide in our careers.
I'm a session musician and composer for hire. I do commission pieces ranging from podcast jingles to keyboard and orchestral arrangements, video game soundtracks, etc. The sky is the limit. If you're looking for custom composition services, you can find me on my website at www.jonahweingarten.com. That's JonahWeingarten.com.
Movie Lovers is a Mally Creative production. I, Mally, am the owner of Mally Creative, a marketing and multimedia design agency. If you or anyone you know is in the market for social media strategy, design, or management services, or perhaps you need a new website designed, or even print or digital graphic design services, please reach out to me at my website, www.mallycreative.com. Again, that's www.mallycreative.com. If you'd like to advertise on our podcast, please reach out to us on social media, on our website at www.movieloverspod.com, or by contacting Mally Creative.